Good morning. This is the Water Environment Committee, and we will open as a subcommittee until we have additional members. We will be hearing House Bill 2732, and Megan, our staff, will explain this to us.
House Bill 2732 deals with mediation settlement in land use matters, and it specifies that the mediated settlement of a land use matter only applies to persons that were parties to the appeal and the mediated settlement of the appeal.
Okay, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, please present.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, speaking in support of 2732. The purpose behind House Bill 2732 essentially is to ensure that a mediated settlement that affects more than the original parties to that mediated settlement, essentially that a mediated settlement can't affect more than the parties to that original mediated settlement. And I'll give you the example of the situation that gave rise to this bill. There was a case in Crook County where Crook County entered into, or where Crook County approved non-resource designations and exceptions designations for about 10,000 acres in the Powell Butte area. They essentially said it's zoned for farm and forest use, but that was a mistake. We're going to rezone that property or take exceptions to that. That decision, which was made after a substantial amount of public hearings, time and public hearings and money spent on the part of the county, was then appealed to the Land Use Board of Appeals, LUBA, by various parties. As a result of that, during the course of that LUBA appeal, the parties all agreed to enter into mediation. They entered into that mediation, and as a result of that mediation, they reached an agreement, a contractual agreement. That agreement called for Crook County to make amendments to its comprehensive plan, and those amendments to its comprehensive plan involved lands that were beyond what had been originally considered during the course of the original hearing. So in other words, the amendments to the comprehensive plan affected people who didn't have a dog in the original fight and didn't know anything about what had gone on to begin with and weren't involved in the initial land use hearing process to begin with. Crook County then, the parties then asked LUBA to order Crook County to make the amendments to its comprehensive plan. They attached the specific amendments to the comprehensive plan that they were going to adopt. Crook County Board of County Commissioners adopted those amendments and that settlement agreement, which then constituted a contract. Crook County was obligated to amend its comprehensive plan in accordance with the ordinances that they had attached to their settlement agreement, and then they sent it up to LUBA. LUBA ordered them to adopt those comprehensive plan changes. Then they held a public hearing, and by the time they held the public hearing and the citizens had an opportunity to testify, it was essentially a done deal. Crook County had obligated itself contractually. LUBA had ordered them to adopt these specific provisions to their comprehensive plan. These specific provisions to their comprehensive plan affected lands and landowners who weren't originally involved in the process to begin with, and the public hearing, the opportunity for a public hearing was really a sham, because what kind of meaningful public testimony can you have when the decision maker has already signed a contract saying this is the decision we're going to make? House Bill 2732 would prohibit local governments from entering into mediated settlements that affected people who weren't parties to that original or to that mediated settlement. We think that's only fair. I have talked prior to the hearing with representatives from the cities and the Department of Land Conservation and Development. They have some concerns with the language. I don't know if we can, at this point, Well, I know that at this point, we can't sit down and fix those quickly. They suggested that we enter into a work group to try and come up with language. I think they're supportive of the concept, want to work on the language. We've done that 1,000 times in past sessions, and more than happy to do that again if the chair and the committee wants us to. We can sit down and see if we can come up with language that essentially supports that concept. But I can't think of a reason why we should have a policy in this state. If citizen participation is the number one goal in land use planning, I can't see why we should support a policy in this state that would allow local governments to enter into mediated settlements to do things which without and then to hold public hearings after they've entered into the mediated settlement and claim that they're holding public hearings. There really aren't public hearings because the deal's already been cut. So more than happy to sit down and work on language, but I think that's the concept and the policy that we're trying to set out here.
Madam Chair.
I have one question. Yes. First, Dave, are you saying that there is nothing in statute to require a public hearing before they enter into a contract?
Madam Chair, there is a statute now that requires a public hearing before a county amends its comprehensive plan. There's not a similar corresponding provision for cities. The question becomes what constitutes a public hearing. You can provide notice and hold a public hearing and allow people to come in and testify. But if you've already entered into a contract and are already subject to a LUBA order that you've asked for that says these are the ordinances that you're going to adopt, and you've attached those ordinances to your settlement agreement, what's the point of having a public hearing? You've already entered into a mediated agreement, a contract, to adopt these ordinances. LUBA's already ordered you to adopt these ordinances. You can have a public hearing and call it a public hearing, but there really isn't a meaningful opportunity for anybody to testify because the deal's already been cut. And so the Crook County case that I've been talking about is on appeal right now, and that's the issue in the appeal, is what Crook County, what they held a public hearing or not. We'll find out.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In relationship to the proposed legislation, is there a retroactivity in the bill as you've written it?
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, the answer to that is no. Section 2 says that the amendments apply to a mediated settlement entered into on or after the effective date of this 2001 Act, so it wouldn't apply to mediated agreements that were entered into prior to this.
Madam Chair, may I follow?
How long?
Is there a possibility that retroactivity in the bill would be possible?
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, I think the answer to that is no. Any mediated settlement entered into prior to the effective date of this measure wouldn't be subject to the provisions.
As written. Excuse me.
Follow.
As written, but can it be amended to allow for retroactivity?
He's asking, would you be willing to do that?
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, sure, you could rewrite this and provide
that was my question.
I don't think it isn't in its current form.
No, I understood in its current form. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Along the same lines, then what happens to the contract that's been signed or that's been entered into? Can you dissolve a contract by making it retroactive?
Madam Chair, it's an interesting question. I don't think there's anything that we can do with this bill to specifically address the Crook County problem, and we're not asking to specifically address the Crook County problem. I think ultimately in that lawsuit, and it's suicide for a lawyer to predict the outcome of a lawsuit, but I think ultimately in that lawsuit we're going to prevail because I don't believe in that particular situation that Crook County held a public hearing. At the same time, I'm not here trying to fix that particular problem, but I'd sure like to make sure that it doesn't happen in the future. And understand, it's a two-way street, you know, it can apply the opposite way as well. I could go into, you know, somebody could go into a county and apply, let's say, for an aggregate pit on one particular property, get a denial from the local government on that particular site, and then enter into a appeal that to LUBA, enter into a mediated agreement with that county to not allow the aggregate site here, but to allow it on three or four other properties that are 10 miles away, other part of the county, enter into an agreement to that effect, and those people that are 10 miles, that own property around the proposed aggregate sites 10 miles down the road, wouldn't have any, you know, they wouldn't have participated in the original hearing because it didn't affect them. And now it comes back, and that particular county holds a public hearing on an agreement that they've, you know, on a comp plan amendment that they've already obligated themselves to adopt. It works both ways, you know, and so we understand that. We just don't think it's very good public policy to be holding a mediated settlement that affects people that never had any interest in the original process to begin with because their property wasn't affected.
Representative Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, excuse me, I'm in the wrong committee. Dave, it's, I guess, number one, I this is fairly straightforward language. I'm not sure what's debatable in this. And number two, I guess that, as I read it or read it initially, this wouldn't set a, even if it was retroactive, this wouldn't set aside any agreement. It would just relieve the people that weren't parties to the agreement to that agreement. And yet, but what you were just talking about, you know, that aggregate case, I guess indeed it would alter the agreement because if you weren't party to the settlement and it has impact on your land, then that would vacate it, wouldn't it? In other words, the case you cited, it's this aggregate pit and then the deal's cut to do all these others and those, the aggrieved parties weren't part of the settlement, then that couldn't happen. Would that be correct?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Cruz, I believe, I'm not sure at this point whether the law would allow for that particular situation to happen or not, but I can tell you that it's not clear under the law currently. This bill may do nothing more than more clearly state the existing state of the law. At the same time, even if that's all it does, even if the law would already prohibit the situation that I'm describing, and all this bill does is more clearly state that, I think, you know, I think that's a good day's work to make sure that these things never see the light of day, so that in my hypothetical, the people that own the land around the new aggregate sites don't have to come in and fight that battle. You've clarified the law. I can't tell you, Representative Cruz, under existing law, whether or not that would be possible. A lot of it depends on what the definition of a public hearing is.
Okay, I guess, Madam Chair, what's unclear to me now that was what I thought clear, but the more we talk about things, the more unclear they usually become. As I initially read this, what it would do is if a landowner wasn't a participant in the mediated settlement, they wouldn't be held to the requirements of the settlement. But I don't think that necessarily addresses somebody who's not a party to the settlement and what the ancillary impacts on their property would be of the settlement. In other words, which gets back to the case you're talking about. If they decide through this agreement to site a quarry over here, they aren't necessarily changing the restrictions on my land, but they've done something on adjacent property which impacts my land. So this doesn't really address that, does it?
Madam Chair, Representative Cruz, The answer to that is no. What we're trying, what this address, what essentially the purpose of this bill is to ensure that there is a meaningful opportunity for a landowner to come in and testify after, if a mediated settlement is entered into, that's going to affect somebody that's not a party to that mediated settlement. That those people have all of the same rights and opportunities that would exist absent that mediated settlement. In other words, in my Crook County case, had the county actually entered into or refused to enter into the settlement agreement, held a public hearing to determine whether the things that they wanted to do via the settlement agreement were consistent with the will of the citizens of Crook County, then entered into the settlement agreement after they had held the public hearing, given people a reasonable opportunity to have their say in a situation where the county hadn't made up its mind, there wouldn't be a problem. The problem that exists is when the county obligates itself, or a city obligates itself to make a decision, and then after they've obligated themselves, then they open it up for a public hearing where, you know, you and I enter into a contract, and then somebody comes in and after you and I enter a contract, one of my competitors comes in and tries to change your mind. Well, the chances of that happening aren't very good because we've already entered into the agreement. So for a citizen to come in the Crook County case and try, when they held their public, their quote public hearings unquote, and try and change the county's mind, what likelihood of success was there? The county had said, here's our settlement agreement, here's our ordinances that we're going to adopt. We've agreed in the settlement agreement to adopt these specific ordinances. LUBA's ordered us to do it. Have your public hearing, say what you want, though. We have to do this.
Just one more follow-up, Madam Chair. I guess. And I understand that. I would wonder if they've already been through the LUBA process and they've reached agreement, but it's not a signed agreement. I guess my question would be, so many times we have public hearings that are just a dog and pony show, and that they do it because it's a legal requirement to do it, but the decision's already been made. I'm wondering if we are really changing a lot of those circumstances by this.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Cruz, that's a tough question to answer. I don't know if we can legislate morality on behalf of the government officials. I would hope that when they hold public hearings, they actually listen to the testimony and give everybody a meaningful opportunity to participate. But it's obvious in that particular case that I'm talking about that the citizens didn't have a meaningful, at least my clients never had a meaningful opportunity to participate. They relied on the county to defend their original decision. The county didn't defend their original decision. My clients were hurt, and they never got an opportunity to have their say. So I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Representative Lynn.
Yes, Dave. I like the way this is worded, especially that you're making it not effective until after the sex. I think it could create a lot of problems in getting the bill passed if you try to make it retrospective, and we don't know what decisions it might actually undo. But I think you may have already answered my question. I just want to be sure that was there ever a hearing on this subject at any time before the settlement occurred?
Madam Chair, Representative Lee, there were a whole series. There were years of hearings in this Crook County case on what they were going to do. The problem was the settlement agreement made changes to the comprehensive plan that were never contemplated in the original hearings. It made a whole series of changes that people didn't have, they essentially changed what they were doing as part of the mediated settlement, and so people who were originally supportive of the mediated or of the original agreement, the county's original agreement, wouldn't be supportive of this, but never really had an meaningful opportunity to testify.
So before they signed the document, then they should have had one more hearing for everyone to
Well, that's right, and Madam Chair, Representative Lee, that's right, and getting back to Representative Cruz's comments, which I appreciate, whether the county would, whether that hearing would truly be a public hearing, I don't know the answer to, but at least there wouldn't be a contractual obligation, and at least there wouldn't be a LUBA order saying, you know, thou shalt adopt these provisions. Those wouldn't have occurred, so at least, you know, my people would have at least at that point felt like they had a shot. But by the time, in this particular Crook County case, by the time it came back for a public hearing, we didn't have any chance. You just didn't. It was done.
Madam Chair.
Representative Half.
In the Crook County case, what exactly was the effect? Can you give me an example of the effect it's had on the uninvolved parties?
Madam Chair, Representative Hass, in 98, when the county made its original decision, they took approximately 10,000 acres, okay? And they had had grants from the DLCD and had years of public input and prepared a detailed report and started out with 90,000 acres, boiled that down to 10, and said these 10,000 acres in this Powell Butte area aren't farmland, and aren't forest lands. We're going to take exceptions for about half or about 3,000 acres. We're going to take exceptions to goals 3 and 4. And for the other about 7,000 acres, we're going to just simply say it's non-resource land. It doesn't meet the definition of ag land under goal 3 or forest land under goal 4, so it's non-resource land. That was the 1998 decision. That was the one that went up on appeal. As part of the mediated settlement, they essentially took the non-resource land, 7,000 acres of non-resource land, and said, well, we're going to withdraw that decision. So those 7,000 acres are now going back, essentially back into a farm zone. The 3,000 acres of exception land, that's okay. Everybody agrees that those people can have that part of the decision will stay. But the folks in the 7,000 acres, they're going to lose. They're going back into a farm zone. And not only that, but we're going to amend our comprehensive plan to essentially say that the comp plan is going to say that land will be farmland forever. And not only that, but we're also going to say that all land north of Highway 126, which is land from which goes, I believe, all the way to Wheeler County, from Crook County to Wheeler County, and encompasses thousands of acres, is going to remain in farmland forever. And our comp plan is going to say that. It's not state, it's not the rules that are going to say that. So even if I could demonstrate under LCDC's goals that my land isn't farm or forest land, if it's north of Highway 126 or it's part of that 7,000 acres, the Crook County comp plan is going to say that land is farmland. We never, those issues were never on the table in 1998, were never contemplated by the parties, and anybody that owned land north of Highway 126 wouldn't have ever been involved because they were talking about 10,000 acres in the Powell Butte area. And so, you know, it's when that came back and all those changes had been made that you know, the folks with the 7,000 acres said, well, not only is the county refusing to defend their 1998 decision, but they're also amending their comprehensive plan to essentially say that my land is farmland forever, even if I could prove under goal three it is an ag land. And the people north of Highway 126 said, well, you know, we were never part of this to begin with because you were talking about land over here in Powell Butte, not land up here near the border of Wheeler County. And now you're amending your comp plan to say that essentially my land up here near the border of Wheeler County is going to be in farmland, even if I can show under LCDC's definition of ag land, it isn't. So those were the changes that were never contemplated by anybody in the years worth of public hearings that led up to the 1998 decision.
Representative Jensen.
Just a question: if this statute, their proposed law that you're bringing to us, House Bill 2732, is not approved by this legislature, does this mean that the decision that has been reached and in the case you're referring to becomes precedent for the rest of the state, that it may, in other words, may reappear in that same type of format in other places?
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, the answer to that is maybe. As I said, that the Crook County case is on appeal now, and ultimately we may prevail, and if we prevail, then it's a legal precedent that at least as to those specific facts, they can't do that. And it may set a broader legal precedent that basically you can't do that at all.
But then
it may set a precedent only that you can't amend, that a local government can't amend its comprehensive plan without holding a public hearing. It may not apply to decisions from local governments to amend their zoning ordinance as opposed to their comp plan. We don't know how broadly the ruling will be. And the nice thing about this bill, or you know, about 2732, is it essentially sets that it clarified that.
I realize this is difficult for you to have answered because you obviously are making, and as you should, the assumption that you're going to prevail or you wouldn't be there. But if you don't prevail, does it make it a legal precedent for other action?
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, yes. If we don't prevail, that would be authorized. And not only that, but it would also be in a LUBA, you know, it would also be at least in a LUBA opinion and maybe a Court of Appeals opinion that this is acceptable.
Yeah.
And so you may have that pattern
appearing
in other counties.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For the presentation. Very interesting bill. Interesting information. Call forth Mike Callmayer of Thousand Friends.
Chair Close and members of the committee, my name is Mike Colmar, and this testimony is submitted on behalf of 1,000 Friends of Oregon. And I anticipated testifying after Dale Blanton, so part of my testimony refers to what Dale has indicated he is going to recommend to this committee. I have submitted written testimony, and I will briefly summarize portions of that testimony. Thousand Friends of Oregon opposes House Bill 2732 as currently drafted because we believe it would be, in many cases, a disincentive for mediation. We support the concept of mediation and believe it can be a very useful tool. HB 2732 would discourage mediation, however, because it would either limit rather severely the applicability of the result or would, in many cases, require the process to include an unwieldy number of participants. Either way, House Bill 2732 makes mediation significantly less attractive as an alternative to litigation, and as a result, we fear would be seldom used. We do support what I believe Dale Blanton will recommend, and that is that a working group be formed to study this issue and to recommend changes if they are needed to the mediation provision currently contained in ORS 197-860. Thousand Friends of Oregon appreciates the opportunity to testify on this bill, and I would be happy to try to answer any questions.
I guess I have one. Are you and Dale Blanton, are you in the same organization working together?
No, ma'am. Chair Close, I am a member of, I'm on the staff of 1,000 Friends of Oregon, and Dale Blanton is an employee of the state. He is part of the dispute resolution.
I realize that, but you've apparently gotten together on your testimony, is that correct?
I spoke to Dale yesterday morning, and he indicated to me what he was thinking about and what he was proposing to recommend, and I confirmed with him this morning that he was going to recommend that, and that's why my testimony refers to his recommendation.
Okay. I guess I have a question. These people over in the Powell Butte area, you're saying this would discourage mediation. Wouldn't in the case that's been brought forth for Cook County, I don't see how it would discourage mediation in that case.
In a legislative land use decision that's going to have broad applicability, and the city or county makes a decision and that decision is appealed, then if, and the city or the county is going to be a party to that appeal, a matter cannot be mediated unless all parties to the appeal agree to mediate the settlement. And House Bill 2732, as it is currently drafted, would make it clear that if this matter is mediated, it will only apply to the number of people that are part of the mediation. So in a legislative land use decision setting, you would either have to include every property owner whose land might be affected by the new legislation, or it would only apply to a small number of people that decided that they did want to participate in the mediation. So that would make mediation of a legislative land use decision very unattractive, and it would probably never occur. I do agree with Dave Honeycutt's proposal that mediated settlements ought to be fair to the people affected by it, and that there should be an opportunity for citizen participation in land use decisions. Now, in the Paul Butte situation, there was, as Dave indicated, lots of public hearings prior to the county making its initial decision. Anybody that participated in those public hearings could have intervened in the appeal, and if they had intervened in the appeal, they would have been part of the mediation process.
But he testified that some of this land wasn't in these hearings, but it was affected by the decision that came down from LUBA that they had to change their comprehensive plan. So those people apparently didn't even know that they were going to be included in that. So they are left, wouldn't you agree they were left out of the process?
I believe that the mediated settlement applies to the land that was part of the original decision. It is true that there is a term in the settlement that refers to land north of Route 126, but I believe all parties to the settlement believe they were talking about land that was part of the Paul Butte study area that is north of 126, not all land that is north of 126. So it's a matter of interpretation, I believe, whether or not the settlement agreement went beyond the lands that were part of the Paul Butte study area, part of the original county hearings, and part of the original county decisions.
Hey, Representative Cruz.
So you have no problem with decisions being made affecting people's land that they are not a participant in?
Chair Close, Representative Cruz, no, I do have a problem with decisions being made that affect people and them not being able to be part of that decision. I believe there should be citizen participation in land use decisions. The House of Friends of Oregon has always strongly advocated opportunities for citizens to participate in land use decisions.
But you said in your testimony that it would make it unwieldy if we had too many people involved, and you cited specifically legislative action that affects land use. I guess I'm confused as to where you really stand on this thing. The example that the chair used, I think clearly there are cases where a LUBA agreement affects people that probably didn't know that they were even in the hunt in the first place, and so their involvement is clearly after the fact. And do you have a problem with changing statute to make sure that anybody potentially affected is aware of what's going on and has the ability to participate?
Chair Close, Representative Cruz, no, I believe that 197-860 could be revised to ensure adequate protections for affected property owners. But I believe that the current draft of HB 2732 would discourage mediation in many cases where mediation might now be very useful and very beneficial.
I guess I'm unclear as to how you've come to that conclusion. Could you kind of elaborate a little bit there? Basically, if this says that the settlement only pertains to those who are part of the agreement, it isn't necessarily compelling anybody to go out and invite the whole world in. It's just kind of, isn't it basically saying that the people that are part of this are the universe we're talking about. We're not talking about anybody else.
Chair Close, Representative Cruz, I agree. When particularly a legislative land use decision is involved, the applicability of that decision will be very broad. And the public hearings that are held before the city or county reaches that decision would notify everybody that's going to be affected and give everybody that's going to be affected an opportunity to come to those public hearings. When a decision is made, that decision can be appealed. And if it can be appealed by any party that has participated in those public hearings and is adversely affected by the decision. When a land use decision is appealed, any party that was part of the process can intervene in that decision and become part of the LUBA appeal. And if a LUBA appeal is mediated rather than litigated, that is based upon the agreement of all the parties that have intervened and have become parties to the LUBA appeal. So if we had a legislative land use decision that was appealed, but only some but not all of the property owners decided to intervene in the appeal and decided to participate in the mediation, If this version of the revision to 197.860 is enacted, then the outcome of the mediated settlement would be a legislative land use decision that had maybe a checkerboard pattern. It would apply to this property, but it would not apply to that property. It would apply to only those properties whose landowners were represented in the mediation. The city or county is not going to be interested in a legislative land use decision that has a limited applicability when all is said and done. So I believe this would discourage mediation of any of those legislative land use decisions.
Just one more follow-up, Mr. Chair. I guess human nature being what it is, and let's say a county is anticipating making a change, and they schedule a series of public hearings to get input, and my neighbor goes, and we're all a bunch of farmers, and we don't like government anyway, and we're too busy to really do a lot of this stuff, and he comes back from this first one and says, well, the county's moving in this direction, and I say, well, that's fine with me, and since things are going the way I want, I'm just not even going to show up. And then they go through all that, then they go to LUBA and we do a 180, and suddenly it's something I don't like, but because I made assumptions on the front end that it was going one way, I'm excluded from any personal remedy. And you know, I guess that is one of the problems with going to mediation and coming and doing an agreement, because it could end up being something different than what the landowners assumed it was going to be, and so they have been excluded simply by assumption, and maybe it is their fault to a degree, but human nature being what it is, if things are going the way you want, you usually stay silent on it. So, I can see some problems there.
Chair Close, Representative Cruz, I agree with you And I believe there should be incorporated into the mediation provision an opportunity to re-present to the public the results of mediation.
But this
2732 doesn't do that. It produces a result that would be either limited in its applicability or would require every landowner that is involved in or affected by the land use decision, and if we're talking about legislative land use decisions that affect 10,000 acres in Crook County, or we're talking about Title III legislation that affects a lot of people in the metropolitan area, this provision, I believe, would make mediation unattractive in those cases. And our concern is that there not be any unnecessary disincentives to mediation, because we believe that mediation can be a useful tool in resolving land use disputes.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One issue came up as you were talking, struck concern on my part. And I think it has to do, and I'm probably using words that are not exactly what you used, but who has standing in appeal of the decision. And if I understood you correctly, that the only those people who had participated in or that were part of the geographic boundary that originally were the only ones that would have standing or that would be able to appeal, and that for purposes of maybe clarifying my question, that those people north of Highway 126 in the example given would not have appeal rights. Is that correct? Even though they were affected?
Chair Close, Representative Jensen, the mediation provision in 197-860 is a provision that allows mediation in lieu of a LUBA appeal. So
okay.
The parties that are outstanding to participate in the LUBA appeal, that is the first threshold, because the parties to the mediation will normally include only those that are parties to the LUBA appeal. Now, another possibility exists, if that is that 197-860 could be modified such that if the dispute is taken to mediation, there could be another opportunity for parties to join that mediation that did not want to join the LUBA appeal, but now have a reason to join the mediation. I don't have the answer to the problem that Representative Cruz is concerned about and that Dave Honeycutt is concerned about. I believe that problem can be solved, but I don't believe that the current draft is the best way to solve it.
Okay, there's no further questions. Thank you very much. Call forth Dale Blanton, State of Oregon Dispute Resolution Program.
Chair Close and committee members, good morning. For the record, I'm Dale Blanton. I'm the Public Policy Dispute Resolution Coordinator for Natural Resource Agencies. I want to correct for the record, Mr. Honeycutt referred to me as a DLCD employee in a former life, yes, but in my current role, I do sit at an office at DLCD, but my responsibility is for the state's 14 natural resource agencies. And then,
could you speak just a little louder?
Sure. And then through the program that I work with, we also offer mediation, technical assistance, service, potential grants to cities and counties involved in land use disputes that have been appealed to the Land Use Board of Appeals. Normally, Susan Brody, who's the executive director from the Oregon Dispute Resolution Commission, would also be here with me. Today, she's working on her budget presentation. I have discussed these comments with her, and these basically reflect her views as well as those of the Natural Resource Program. I want to first state that I think this bill does aim itself at a very legitimate issue in the context of mediation of LUBA cases. One of the principles of mediation is that mediation is a practice that should be inclusive. In other words, all participants to any dispute or issue should be at the table. And we would promote a bill that encourages and assures that that happens in these mediated settlements in LUBA cases. But I want to talk about a couple of practical problems that I see with the language in the bill. And I realize mediation in land use cases can get extremely complex, and there are a wide range of cases that the parties decide to enter into mediation. And I think the Crook County example presents some particular problems, and I'd be glad to discuss those, but I want to say that it is not indicative of every case that would be appropriate for mediation or that has gone through the process. The point I want to make on this is, in terms of the language, I don't think it will necessarily accomplish its intended results. Typically, a mediated agreement in a land use case that has gone through the LUBA process is an agreement between the parties to the appeal that must be then ratified by the local decision maker that made the initial decision. For the most part, those decision makers are not parties to the mediated settlement, but act in the capacity as an independent decision maker, much like this body or other public bodies when presented with mediated settlement options. And many of these agreements, therefore, go through that public ratification process and a public hearing process that is apart from the mediation, where those decision makers have an obligation to carry out their responsibility to their public in holding public hearings that are open to all affected parties and participants. So in most of the examples I can think of, mediated agreements go through this public review process in a very open way. The language is not clear, at least in the bill as far as I can see it, that actions as part of mediated agreements that become ratified through a separate public review process are captured by the limit on application to non-participating parties. And let me try and use an example. If there is a mediation, and I'll actually grasp back a few years to a case we had in Albany that involved the application of vinyl siding to some historic structures within the city's historic district. The parties to that case involved neighborhood folks, involved owners of the historic properties, involved some city staff members, and involved some interest groups who promoted historic preservation. The situation in that particular mediation was really around what happened with these two structures, which had vinyl siding applied to them, contrary to the city's existing regulations. Well, all of those folks decided that rather than try and go through a lengthy appellate process through LUBA in the courts, that they wanted to try and sit down and work out an agreement that would resolve the issue around these properties. But what happened was the negotiated agreement also resulted in a recommendation, to the city council that not only did they need to resolve it vis-a-vis these specific properties and situations, but that they needed to make some changes to their historic district. And those changes did, by their very nature, they were legislative, affect other properties within the historic district, but they also affected many interests within the community, including interests of the historic preservation promotion kinds of organizations. Under this language, I'm not clear if someone could make an argument, say they were part of a neighborhood group or part of a historic preservation organization. I'm not sure that they couldn't argue later on if they hadn't been participants or if they owned other properties or if properties sold, that because even though this went through a public review process subsequent to the mediated agreement, that they could make a legal argument that those newly adopted regulations did not apply to them, and therefore they were entitled to seek application of the old standards. Again, it's a problem I see in the way the language is drafted that may create some interpretation issues. The second piece of that, if you take the example that I just laid out, and that is it keeps a record-keeping process for local government that may create some difficulties. And that is any time a land use regulation is either adopted or amended or an action is taken that may have been based on a recommendation coming out of a mediation setting, you would have to have in your records a list of all the participants, and then that mediated settlement would only apply to those folks. And it may be 10 years hence that someone else comes up against the same issue, and if they weren't participants, they would not be covered by necessarily the legislative impact of that mediated settlement. So again, a practical problem, I think, in the way the language is drafted. My suggestion to the committee is that you consider the creation of a small work group. And I think the folks I work with in both the private sector mediation community, the Oregon Mediation Association, and a number of land use attorneys that are connected with the real estate and land use section of the bar would be very interested in trying to work out some language that both accomplishes, I think, the initial objective here, which is not to impact third parties who weren't either aware of or involved in the process, and yet balancing that against creating a mediation opportunity that is meaningful and doesn't either result in folks sort of restructuring the way they do their mediation agreements to comply with the statute, or result in simply folks saying, well, mediation is not a viable option here. In my history with the mediation program in the state, there have been many, many cases where mediation offered parties a chance for long-term settlement and resolving issues where continuing the legal process was going to be quite costly and may not have resolved the cases in as amicable a way. So I'd like to encourage you to look at a draft that maintains that balance and still encourages folks to consider meaningful, viable mediations. I'll go ahead and answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Blanton. Being from Albany, I was interested in your vinyl siding application. I guess the problem there is there's a whole lot of difference between vinyl siding on a house, 7,000 acres of land, put in EFU forever with no appeal. You know, I think it breaks down a little bit there, but even on the vinyl siding issue, I remember that the citizens felt very strongly they wanted to be involved in the process, and there was a lot of question about how far the historic district should go without allowing people to have input, the citizens that own the property. Wouldn't you say that that's a little bit of a different issue?
Madam Chair, in the context of mediation, the principle of providing for access to the mediation process by all involved stakeholders or parties, in either case, I think is what I'm urging. I do think those two cases were dissimilar, and the point I was trying to make is solving a problem that's aimed really at what happened in Crook County may not be the same solution that would have helped the folks in the city of Albany. And in that particular instance, at least as I understand it, the resolution of that really healed a lot of community wounds, and the solution that was arrived at through a mediated process was quite successfully implemented.
I have one more question. I'm just wondering about your name appearing in the Thousand Friends testimony. Can you tell the committee, are you a member of Thousand Friends, or are you a member of one of the 13 local land use groups that they are affiliated with?
Well, Madam Chair, no, I am not a member of 1,000 Friends or any of their groups. I'm not sure. I did talk this morning with Mr. Kohlmeyer. He was asking me. I had briefly talked with him yesterday, and I also talked in the hall with Mr. Honeycutt about what it was I was going to say. And I have not tried to actually influence either one about what they say in their testimony. So I'm not sure of the connection. I think the testimony from Mr. Kohlmeier, as I remember reading quickly what he said he was going to say, is supportive of my recommendation primarily that a small work group would be appropriate. And I did indicate when I talked with him yesterday that that's likely what I was going to suggest. I thought that would be a good way to work out what I saw as maybe some drafting issues.
Okay. Thank you very much. Committee, I think that the suggestion of having a work group is a good one. Is that acceptable to you, Mr. Heike? To work on the wording, and we would like to bring this bill back, and I think it's a good bill that we should proceed on. So, hearing no further comments, we will close the public hearing on 2732, and if there's nothing else for the committee, we are adjourned.
Okay.